Good evening, everybody. I'm Suffolk Ram.
Skazius.
Welcome to episode 175 of the Brand Nerds podcast.
Rather than the movie or the series or...
Well, you never know. The website.
Yeah, 175th website. I was about to say, you don't do episodic films, do you, unless you're George Lucas?
Because our episodes are in order, though. That doesn't make sense for George Lucas.
No, you have a fair point. When are we going to start doing the re-releases?
This should be episode, 2000, and then we'll start in a few years' time doing episode one again.
Oh, that'd be great. And then we can take out all the bits that people really like.
Yep.
And change them, and then go, no, I've got an idea. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back and I'll re-record a load of stuff, and none of it will make sense. And we'll make millions.
To be fair, we've done adding the extra characters in and getting rid of them again. We've done that bit.
Yeah, goddamn side characters.
Done all that bit, you know. And we're going to have to sort of digitally remaster ourselves.
Can I just throw out there, no one notices when side characters leave. Very, very rarely do people go, where are they gone? Or who are they?
There's a whole TV trope. TV Tropes has a thing called What Happened to Mouse? And that's basically a whole base round side characters that you meet and you see, and they just seem to disappear, and no one ever comments on it. And it's like, oh, what happened to him? No one knows.
Yeah, but you don't mention the girl that serves you the coffee and the baked goods at the local whatever. She's technically a side character, but we never think about it.
But everybody's a side character in my life. Everybody's an NPC.
Everyone is an NPC.
Some have better AI than others. It's just that it is. For example, there's some bad following AI at the moment because I drove to work today to the farm and I drove past a petrol station and saw them coming outside and I thought, you bunch of idiots.
Oh, don't. I've got to fill up three jerry cans. They're out of fuel now. It's like, well, yeah, because you've just filled up fucking three jerry cans, you twat.
I didn't know about the fuel shortage until yesterday. When I drove into the petrol station to fill up because I was getting low. And I went in like I normally do, brim the car up, and I was like, it's awfully busy today. You know, it's like people coming. It's like, I've never seen it this busy. I mean, this is just all normal. I know it's a bit later than I normally come past, so I must be just catching the rush in the morning. I didn't think anything of it. And as soon as I saw, drove to the farm, I was like, went past another petrol station, saw them queuing there, thought, is something going on with the fuel that I don't know about? So I got there and Googled full UK issues, and then it came up like, oh, people think there's a shortage going to happen.
So now everyone's going mental, and now we have no fuel because everyone's got like 10 jerry cans in their garage.
Exactly. The people who like to sort of perhaps drive like once a week to the shops and have their car full most of the time have to side of the bed, brim it up just in case, because this full shortage lasts the next 6 years.
Yep.
It's annoying. There wouldn't be if... And it's all the media's fault. Media say...
But didn't we say the same thing about the toilet paper?
Of course it is. Media say... First of all, media create a full storyline of, oh, there's going to be fuel shortages. They only have to do any work. All they need to do is like, okay, say about fuel shortages. Right. Right, tomorrow's headline. People could panic buying a fuel at a petrol station. Government says not to worry. And when they just wait to say someone send it, get a stock photo of people queuing at a petrol station, pop it in there. We don't have to come in tomorrow now, lads. We can go to the pub for an extra night.
That is pretty much what... I mean, that's what I said to a lot of people. So why are you filling up for? Because there'll be a fuel shortage. There will be, because you're going to fill up.
Yeah.
You're picking up more than you realistically need.
Yeah.
And so now you're draining the stations. Like,
yep. I used to my phone. When I passed and I saw more queuing, I thought to my friend. I said after I found out what was going on, I said, I reckon if I went and knocked on all those people's cars, I said, why are you filling up? They'd probably have a very good reason to say, good reason why they're filling up, why they're not panic buying. They're not panic buying. They're filling up for X, Y, Z good reason, so forth. And I said to him, if that was true, why is it normally not queued up like that then?
Mm-hmm.
So I was just, I'm fucked up. I mean, I'm filled up anyway because I just tend to get to the red and fill it right up to the top again. That's how I've always filled my car up.
Same with my bike. So I'll figure out how far I need to go. figure out how long until I hit the reserve tank, and it's not until I hit the reserve that I go, right, now I need to find a petrol station.
Yeah.
And my reserve's like, what, 30 miles? So yeah. I'd fucking hope I can find a petrol station in 30 miles, you know?
I always try and keep enough in the tank I can get back to the farm and back, and yeah. a bit of spare in case. So I always try and keep in the tank. Yeah. So like sort of probably a sort of a 100 miles range in the tank I try and
kind
keep.
Of like how aeroplanes work.
Yeah.
You know, they don't just go, like, fuck it, mate, just load it up, because you're carrying more to burn more.
Yeah. Well.
They go, right, we need to carry this distance. We need to go this distance, and maybe in an emergency, tack on a bit more. Put that amount in.
Yeah. Done. They have enough fuel to divert to the next nearest airport. And they have fuel for flying. I forgot what the term is when they just keep flying around, waiting for the spade.
I know what you're on about, though. The old Die Hard 2 scenario.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, they're sort of part. I know it's not parking orbit, but similar thing. They have enough fuel for that, and they obviously have fuel for taxiing. But it's quite important to get it right, because obviously. The amount of fuel that a plane can the amount of weight a plane can take off with is generally a lot more than it can land with.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So that's why I often end up dumping fuel if they have to come back to the airport. It's like, well, we can't land, because if we land, we'll probably break the plane. We've got too much weight on board. So
because the gear will collapse, and then they just end up on the they just end up skimming across the runway. But like, that's kind of my point. Like, you know, people shouldn't really. You don't need to drive around with a full tank all the time.
No.
You don't. Unless you know you're going the distance and you might need to divert, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But as you say, people have been told, everything's going to go wrong. Go buy fuel. But you don't need to go buy fuel.
And the next day, why is everybody panic buying? Can't understand it. It's like, yeah, you
where's
fucking
all the fuel? That's funny, that. There's a fuel shortage.
Yeah, but the thing is, there isn't a fuel shortage. The fuel is there. The issue
it will
is
keep coming through.
The issue is getting it to the petrol stations. That's the issue. And it's because there's no one driving Arctics at the moment, because they can't get through. And to be fair, they are short of drivers. One of the main issues was that last year, there were basically no HGV tests going on, so there's no new influx. But I tell you what else I think the reason is, there's no one bloody, we've pretty much not discouraged anyone coming from, like, particularly Europe, coming over to actually drive our lorries for us.
Yeah.
So why would they now have always gone bags and that nonsense?
So, no, I think a lot of the fluff came in from the COVID stuff last
certainly
year.
Helped. Didn't help.
Where everyone was basically stuck, and they're like, dude, I ain't doing that again. Like, I can't. I'm stuck here sleeping in my cab for a week.
Yeah.
And I'm not going anywhere. Like, when the end is like near, you don't bother about it that much. But when you are literally just sat there at a standstill for a week, they probably just thought, no, I ain't doing it.
Yeah.
If that's what I risk facing every time I do it, whilst this whole, you know, whilst the pandemic's going on and all that, is like, no, we're not doing it.
Apparently last year, the average range of wage for a lorry driver was between 19 to 35,000. 19,000 isn't that much, and I don't know if that's okay, if that's based on day trippers. What they call them? There's one of the drivers who tell me the terminology. It's like they have like day, it's like people who just go out on the day and come back to the depot at night. They don't sleep overnight. They probably get paid, I'd imagine, less than people who sleep in the cab. Well, they're quite posh, those cab lorries now, actually.
It depends, though.
To be fair, all ones I see, we don't get many old lorries turning up. Because of the amount of mileage they do, there aren't many old ones about. So I think the oldest one we get ours is probably from like 4 or 5 years ago. And even these days, in the basic ones, so I spoke to a few of them, and I've had a look in a few of the cabs, because I meet a lot of lorry drivers in my line of work, and they're no hotel room, but they're all right, actually. They're not bad. You got your bed you can lay out in. You got some of them even have microwaves in them now.
I don't really think that was really the issue, though, was it? Like, how comfortable they were whilst they were sat there for a week or so.
Oh, no, that's obviously excessive.
You know,
I was talking more in general. I was talking more not that specific, I was talking more like in general the day to people who do nights and so forth in general, what the life's like on the road, rather than that specific exceptional service.
But I'm saying that, like, that I think that's the problem with what we have now. I mean, let's be fair though, how many people realistically want to drive those long distances, those long hours? No one. You can barely get someone to stock shelves.
Yeah.
You know, they all want to do YouTube or Twitch, or, you know, they want to do something where they don't have to fucking go anywhere or do anything, which I'm all for. But then I also don't want to hear those people complain when they can't get the shit they want.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Like, some of those lorry, like the lorry drivers, I don't think they get paid enough for the job they do.
No, definitely not.
They don't. It's a fucking brutal job with brutal hours and brutal rules.
When I found that most of them were on, you know, basically just above minimum wage, and they are driving like 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
Well, there was talk that the government was going to relax those rules as well. Because I think they are allowed to do, I might get it slightly wrong, what did the guy tell me? I was speaking to the guy about it. One of our regular drivers, who's one from a big chain. I won't say which chain it is, but one of the big hauliers. And he was telling me, I think they basically do 14-hour days, and they're allowed one 16-hour day a week.
Let's be fair again, though. Most people complain about having to work for 4 hours.
Well, you wait.
Or 6 hours.
That's what I said. I might get numbers slightly wrong here. Apparently, the government were looking at relaxing those restrictions so that they could do 16-hour days and one 18-hour day a week.
Which is mental, because you're not going to... Look, mate, seriously, I've done very, very long drives, very, very long rides, and by the time you're on that return trip, like, after, you know, mile 400, 500, 600 or whatever, you are fucking brain dead.
Of course, yeah.
Like, it's exhausting.
It is very exhausting. No one wants to do that. And you're constantly reminded of the fact that you're putting something that weighs, when it's loaded, potentially up to, sort of, say, 45, 50 tons of weight.
If you think that driving a car or riding a motorcycle is exhausting over long distances, now imagine doing gear shifts constantly until you get up to speed, knowing that you could kill someone if you don't pay attention, that the more you drive, obviously, the more likely you are to be, you know, you're going to be tired, you're more likely to have an accident.
They're pretty much all automatic now. They're pretty much all automatic. There's very few manuals left now.
But still, there's a lot you have to take in.
And they all now, I mean, I know it sort of doesn't help the drivers that much, but they all also now have collision mitigation. Collision mitigation built in. The other reason I know, I've found a friend of mine works in insurance and used to insure dealing with fleets of lorries, basically, Arctics and lorries. He doesn't do that bit anymore, but I was asking questions about him before, and he was saying, oh yeah, they've pretty much all got collision mitigation, because they're all generally new. You don't get many old ones on the road. They've all got their... You only get them really now in private hands, the old ones, because and even a lorry that's 4 or 5 years old could have pushing like 750,000 miles on it. They do insane mileage. So he was... So they have got sort of safety systems in place, but ultimately there's a fleshy human in there who's responsible.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. It's not a job I would want to do. And I always assumed before I found out how badly paid they were, I always thought it was a fairly well paid job for how shit it was. I always thought it was quite fairly well paid. When I found out how shitly paid it was, I thought, well, why the hell do it?
Yeah, why do they do it?
Well, I actually asked the guy, I said, why would anyone do it? And his response was, well, most lorry drivers, there aren't many who do it for life. Most let you get a license, they work like Billy-O for 6-7 years, or a decade even, doing this, not having any of it off, working these extremely long days, make a mint of money, because they just save it all, because they're not at home, so they can just save it all up, and then they go and work somewhere else. they mm-hmm. drop out the whole thing and go do something else. And they go to like sort of more daily stuff, like just normal delivery drivers or little day trucks which aren't so intense. And then unless they've got a family, most ones who live by themselves have literally a tiny little house because 6 days of the week they're not there. So
yeah, for sure.
I mean, they have like little apartment or flat somewhere and pretty much live on the road.
But that's what I was kind of getting at with the whole, I don't think it's just that people aren't being licensed. Mm. I also think that largely people are going, dude, I ain't doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to have to go through that, no. And no one appreciates it.
No.
And so when you talk to people about farming,
yeah,
they don't give a shit about a farmer. They don't give a shit about a delivery driver. But crap, man, you talk about some random fucking sports personality, they've got everything nailed down. Like, that person is the savior of the universe. Yeah. So, but without the delivery drivers, you don't get half your shit because none of your shit's made in this country.
Yeah. The issue with visas getting people over here, the issue obviously mainly caused by Brexit, both are caused by COVID because, you know, travel restrictions and so forth. People used to complain about all the lorry drivers being foreign, and they were. You know, I would say two, three years ago, I would say two-thirds of the drivers I encountered, probably three-quarters, a lot of them were Polish, but I had French. Generally, they were foreign. There weren't many British lorry drivers out there.
Yeah, because most stuff is going from
these were British hauliers, but they were prepared, in the case of Polish, prepared to come over and work those shifts, work those hours, because it was paid better than where they were from. Mm-hmm. So what happened?
But again, that, and we have an influx. We have a generation of people, as I said, who bellyache over working 4, 6, 8 hours.
And these people didn't worry about that. That's what they just did.
Well, yeah, because they just want a fucking job.
And people used to complain about, oh, people retain the drivers, all the drivers are foreign, you know, all the farm workers are foreign. It's like, yes, you get rid of them, you stop them coming in and so forth, you put the fee restrictions up or they can't come in because of COVID or whatever, but no one else wants to do it.
Exactly.
So what jobs are they taking exactly? What British person has lost out a job because someone else has took it when there's no bugger to take it?
Well, that's the exact argument they had with fruit pickers and that.
Yeah.
It was like, no one wants the job, but if you know, Johnny Foreigner comes in and says, hey, yo, I'll do that job, it's like, fuck, mate, do it.
Yeah.
It needs to be done. We complain that foreigners are taking our jobs. We don't want the job,
yeah,
but we'll complain because it's hard work.
Yeah.
Right? It is hard work. All these jobs are, even if you just look at, like, you know, fruit pickers or manufacturing or whatever, driving, hard work, back-breaking work. We don't want it, but we will happily complain when, one, someone else gets the job, two, we don't get the results of the job.
Yeah. Yep, you're
absolutely
right.
Stop fucking complaining. If you want a job done right, do it yourself. Oh wait, you don't want to do the job, so shut up and let them do the job you don't want because you think it's beneath you.
Yeah, that is absolutely it. It's both simultaneously beneath the person, but they've took it from some. It's like this. It's like there's a group of people who believe there's some British class, group of class who would be there who are starving to death. Because these jobs have been took by somebody else.
Yep.
And truth is, no, it isn't. People don't want to go pick fruit in a field for 12 hours a day.
Of course not. Most people these days, as I say, bellyache after 4 hours.
Yeah.
Four hours of a standard-ass job.
I know,
so do you want money or not?
Yeah. I know a few farmers who would only hire now, basically, after basically hiring a few farm workers and find how good they were, said, we'll only hire farm workers.
Well, yeah, because people over here now, we have, what's the minimum wage now?
$8.75, I think.
Right, well, let's say, right, we want $8.75, but we've got a $3.75 work ethic.
Yeah, yes, I like that phrase.
You know, we want all the money for none of the work.
Yeah.
And that's not how it works. The job is simultaneously beneath you, yet so critically important to you that no one can do it good enough.
Yeah. You open up any of the farmers, when I was doing my course, I used to get Farmers Weekly, opening the books up in the job pages, there were adverts for companies, and all these companies did were recruit foreign workers. You could literally ring this company and say, I need five people, and they would have five people ready. They'd sort five people out for you from, and I won't lie, mainly Poland. Mainly from Poland.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I just wanted to sort of like drop set out of it. It's always the Polish people. That was mainly where they were from. Or Eastern Europe. And they would, you could just ring up and they would find them because they would love, happy come over the jobs, and they would sort them out, gain them all. They would, this company would sort all the travel visas and all that sort of, get them over here and you'd have them working for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if those companies still
You can work for a decent wage over here. Worth way more, like doing a shit job, right? But it's a decent wage versus anything you'll get back home.
Mm.
What the fuck would you care?
Yeah.
You could be scrubbing toilets for 12 hours a day. It's a decent wage. But over here, again, we've got an 875 work ethic, an 875 desire, a 375 work ethic.
Yeah.
We want more than we're willing to put in.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's...
There's a whole, I won't do that. Mentality.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I used to have that mentality years ago, back when I was like in my late teens, early 20s. I was like, nope, that job sucks. It's beneath me. Only fucking morons do that job. I've done this. I've done that. I'm way above that. And then, because I can remember like belly aching years ago about this job, right? I won't say what the job was, but I then went and did the job. Initially, I belly ached about it, but it turned out to be one of my favorite jobs of all time. I've enjoyed it way more than being self-employed. Way more. If I can go in, I would do my shift. It would be exhausting, back-breaking work. But when I got out of it, I felt rewarded. I felt like it was worth something as long as I put in the grind.
Yeah.
Most other stuff, I don't feel that. You won't know until you do a job. You won't know until you try it. You can look at it and go, well, that's a bit of shit. I'll admit, dealing with the general public, that's going to suck.
Yep.
Right, but that's not the job's fault.
Yeah, but we have a culture. We have a culture that has been propagated by, you know, just general culture and also by TV and so forth, that if you have a job in, say, I'm going to say retail, if you're a cleaner, if you're on fast food, if you have a job like that, and you're not like a teenager working the weekends while he's at college, you're a loser.
I want to throw out there that those are the people I'm thankful for.
But exactly, they're the ones that keep society, you know, one of the people who keep society running. They're, you know, dustbin men. You know, I've been told as a kid, you know, if you don't sort of like get yourself sorted out, you'll be working on the dust cart.
Yeah.
But
they're the people that keep the rubbish go?
Yeah.
Without them, We live in squalor.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same with the people who spit on the McDonald's worker or the KFC worker or whatever. Oh, you fucking scum.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. It's like, you're the one that just went there to get burgers.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck do you think is going to give you a cheeseburger or a bucket of chicken? You just, like, don't give them shit.
Yeah.
They are literally giving you the thing you want.
Yeah.
They didn't choose to go to that job to be berated by a prick like you.
Yeah.
You know? They're there to work, do their grind like every fucker else.
Yeah.
Providing a service that, strangely enough, the person who looks down on them wants.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolute fucking awesome. That's why I say I greatly appreciate farmers, delivery drivers, retail workers, fucking
refuge workers.
Yeah, look, all of them. Yeah. Because you take one of them away, everything falls to shit.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how little we value these people and yet how highly we value someone else.
Yeah. If your dustmen go on strike for a fortnight, you soon realise they're on strike, you soon know about it.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Didn't that happen a few years ago when we were younger? Didn't they dustmen go on strike?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that from my
childhood.
People
very quickly back down when shit's piling up around your ankles.
Yeah. Do something about it. Well, perhaps we give them some more money. No.
Yeah, pay them.
Yeah, but then they earn as much money as me and I work in an office. That's not right.
I was like, fuck. Yeah, I was like, fuck you, dude. You don't do anything for me.
Yeah. Well,
they do loads for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you're not happy about the money earning in an office, well, there's a high vis, you know, and off you go.
Get on the fucking dustbin.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it's all right. It's fine. Yeah.
But they don't see it like that.
Yeah.
They don't see it like that. You know, I will say, though, it does annoy me when minimum wage goes up and all wages above them stay the same.
Mm.
So let's say I was, let's say, what you say, $8.75. Let's say I'm on $9.75.
Yep.
Right? And then all of a sudden you get, I don't know, $9.25.
Yes.
But my wage stays exactly the same. I'm like, well, thanks for devaluing my skills.
Yeah. That's a cool, that's a company issue, though, rather than
I agree. But it does my fucking head in.
Yeah.
That's why so many people complain about a living wage.
Yeah.
Because you're devaluing everyone above the bottom rung of the ladder.
Yeah. If you...
And it's not the people at the bottom of the ladder. That's not their fault.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, if you... But at the same time, if you... One way... When people, like, complain that... Like, I've seen a lot of Reddit. People complain about, like, people at McDonald's demanding a minimum wage of $15 an hour, which is about £7. And like, well, I work as an electrician. Why I do a lot more work than they do. Why should they get paid as much as me? I think you've missed a point here. The point is, if you give them a minimum wage of $15 an hour, you can now go to your boss and say, I'm underpaid for what I do. Why on earth would I do this fairly technical and kind of job when I can just go flip burgers $15 an hour? You better start paying me more. So it doesn't make your pay worth less, unless you want it to be worth less.
Well, as you say, that's a corporate problem, though, isn't it? Because a lot of people won't then go up to their boss and go, hang on, you've upped theirs, what about me? Because then the boss is like, no, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, but then you can just go leave and go work and flip burgers. I know it sounds... Yeah. It sounds
like, well, I would say that would be fair if you were willing to then take that pay cut and go all the way down to base rate. I'm saying that, let's say, I had an entire pound on before, now I only have 50 pence.
No, it's what, like, I'm saying, the case, the lot of people I saw complaining about when they were putting up in...
If you're square on the level, they're on, say, $7, you're on $7, and you do a more technical job, you better get that shit sorted, or tell them to fuck off and do as Ram said and flip burgers. If you are on a slightly higher wage, though, you're going to have to battle that out with your boss.
Mm.
And chances are your boss ain't going to give it, because then you're cutting into their profits.
Yep.
But let's be fair. The company profits are still huge.
Oh, yeah. Well, depends on the company. But yeah, in general, that markets tend to... No one really loses out when you set... I mean, you've got to be careful. You don't want to over create inflation. But in general, markets don't lose out when there's a minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when people complain that the minimum wage has been brought in the UK and all these complaints, and it hasn't had the effect that they by said it's going to, you know, it has improved everybody's standard of living. I mean, yes, you have to increase it because you know, inflation tends to follow it and the markets tend to follow it. You put everybody's wage up, eventually the market follows, because that's just how a capitalist market works.
Exactly.
So you can't, that's where you've got to be a little increase every so often. You can't put a boy's wage up to £20 an hour, because that would just have a horrendous impact of all layers in the market immediately or in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. If a boy's getting twice as much as they were before, they're going to be clearing the shelves even more.
Yeah.
So you can't just do that, but then the market tends to follow through. So, yeah. Anyway, we've probably gone up after.
Financial section of the podcast.
I say, why do we start all our podcasts now with a politics rant?
Well, because politics is absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
You'd think there's like really simple solutions to a lot of these problems.
Yeah.
But because people are so easy to panic, it's...
We're basically into the Jeremy Vine show on Radio 2 at this stage. We'll soon have to start getting guests on, although we're better than Jeremy Vine.
You're saying we need to go on a radio?
Oh, he's terrible. He has to play devil's advocate to people, but he'll try and play devil's advocate to like anything. Someone could say, "Well, we're from the group who think that we're basically campaigning against children being hit with large rocks," And he'll go, but what about the case of Charles being very ill? Do you not think we should be able to hit him with a large rock? And he'll do that.
Yeah, there are some areas where playing devil's advocate just makes you a moron.
Yes, he does it quite often.
That poor soul.
It's quite fun to listen to him come up with these extreme ideas and so forth. It's like, he's an idiot.
Like, have you been hit over the head with a rock recently?
Please call in and let us know what it was like.
Yeah, because I was going to say, some of these arguments are a bit... But, you know, just randomly just going back to inflation, the only thing that drives me mental about wage increases is the massive difference between the wages going up and house prices going up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but there you go. That's my groove. And be more respectful to the people on the lower runs of not so much society, but on the, you know, the lower run of the bigger corporate plan, because they're the ones that are getting all the shit done.
Yeah.
Realistically. Yeah. They're the ones doing all the grunt work and the grind work that keep everything else going.
Yeah.
Show some respect. It's like when all those people in America were like, oh, well, now that OnlyFans is blocking all of this more mature content, then now all the waitresses can get back to work. And it's like, well, my argument was, hang on, they get a shit wage for doing a shit job. Right, they get no end of shit from the general public whilst doing the shit job for a shit wage. But now they're getting a decent wage for sitting at home with an iPhone.
Yep.
I think they've hit it big.
Yeah.
Let them keep doing it.
Yeah.
And you want them to start doing the shitty job again that you feel that they should do because you need them to do it? Either one, you do it, or two, pay them more.
Yeah.
Treat them better.
Yeah.
Because they are much safer at home with their iPhone.
Yeah.
Than they are working a shit job with you lot throwing coffee over them and, you know, calling them stupid and spitting on them and shortchanging
them. And bear in mind that in a lot of states, they basically go, but they get paid such a pittance because they have to work. They basically, their tips are their wages.
Yeah. I mean, and then tips can be then held by the boss, depending on how the boss wants to do it, and then that gets split between the entire crew.
I love what this guy, what someone was about. It's like, oh, well, they get tips wage, but then, you know, if they encourages good service, says, I'm sorry, I'm from the UK. I've never had bad service in a restaurant, and we do not have a tipping culture like you do.
I agree. Like, yeah. You shouldn't force them to... No.
And then he was like, oh, well, you know, then if you do tipping, then you know... you know, if you don't have tipping and high minimum wage, then all the food prices will go up. I said, I'm sorry, but if you're going out and having to plan in a 20% tip anyway, how's it different to the food prices just being higher?
Yeah.
And why on earth, when you're going out, should I have to subsidise the wage of the person who's serving me by having to figure a tip when you could just put the food prices up? And put it in there, which is what every other sort of place does. You know, every other street.
Let the worker feel safe and secure whilst doing their job by giving them a wage that will allow them to live reasonably comfortably. They will come in confident. They will come in happy, and they will provide you with great service. However, if they go into work knowing full well that they might finish the entire shift and not break even? There's going to be some problems happen eventually.
But look at it like...
There's only so far they can do that before they crack.
Yeah, but look at it also like the form of a... Again, the people who tend to complain the most tend to be the most capitalistic people, like, well, you know, free. You know, we shouldn't do this because, you know, it's free market. Free market's guide, everything we share. Everything should be privatised. You shouldn't have any sort of anything that's probably specialised. Well, newsflash, my friend... Markets responded to the lack of poor wages in the restaurant industry and so forth, and the people have left. The market has worked. Everything you want has happened. Now you're complaining, well, I didn't want the market to work for these people. Mm-hmm. I wanted to work for me and all that sort of stuff. Now the market's working, twist turning. Well, there you go. And if you're a bad restaurant owner or whatever, you'll go out of business because you haven't planned it right. If every other country on the planet can figure it out, you should be able to.
I agree.
So, Anyway, we really must go off politics.
Yes, for sure.
Because I'm sure people listening for the Rad Nerds Gaming Podcast love to hear about our thoughts and opinions on fuel shortages, lorry drivers, and American waitresses and waiters.
Just don't panic.
Don't panic. Right, so, we've been playing Skaz. Pummel Party.
Yeah, Mario Party for adults.
Yeah, I've never played Mario Party, but is it how you obviously have? How similar is it?
They're identical. Fair it's enough. Identical, except it's more family friendly. Like people aren't bleeding or getting horse rockets up the ass.
Yes, that is fairly accurate. What actually happened on our last Pummel Party situation? But it's
did.
Not quite what you're thinking, unless you ain't got a dirty mind.
I was going to say my giant cock ended up very sore at the end of it.
Again, in context, this is not as dirty as it seems.
There was a gimp clown.
There was a
gimp
clown.
As all clowns are.
Yeah. So, I thought it was a neat game, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of Mario Party. I've not liked Mario Party games since they started adding in, you know, waggle controllers or, you know, motion control into their stuff. So they started doing that with the Nintendo Wii. Wii U had waggle controls. Switch has waggle controls. But all of the other games, you could control them with like a control pad. The mini games were fantastic. So basically, what Mario Party, Sonic Shuffle, and Pummel Party are... It's basically a series of mini games wrapped around a board game, or a board game wrapped around a series of mini games. As so, you have a series of, you know, a bunch of characters, and there'll be a, you know, you end up on a random board, which they're all pretty neat. The ones that we've played so far, they're usually themed. So you'll have like a horror theme. We had like a winter theme one. I'm not sure about any of the others.
There's a Wild West theme one, I think, in there somewhere.
Okay, cool. And the idea is, as you move around the board, so you roll a dice, you move around the board, and when you land on spaces, you get the option of having keys, or you can get, like, health back. When everyone has had their turn, a minigame starts. Minigames change all kinds of stuff, depending on what kind of game you're playing, whether it be Mario Party, Sonic Shuffle, or Pummel Party. Pummel Party is a lot more kind of adult in theme, so like people can get cut in half and shot and blown up and things like that. But we've had like lightsaber battles, match up the pictures. So like, you know, you get a picture and then you have to flip blocks to remake that picture yourself. Frogger style things where you like have to move objects across roads and moving traffic. Races.
Shooters,
like all kinds of stuff.
All sorts,
the variety in there's pretty solid. And at the end of each match, depending on who wins, you can get like a certain tier of item that the winner generally gets the better item, and I think the winner gets more keys as well.
Yep, and it also changes the turn order.
Yes, so if you win the game, you get next turn.
Yeah,
second place gets the turn after that. Yeah, if you. First place, second place gets second turn, third place then ends up. So if you, right, anyway. So after that, the aim of the game is to, right, the way you win, that's not about winning the mini games. Mini games will get you items and keys. Round the map, a board, there'll be specific like key points based on whatever the theme of the level. So in the first one, which we played was the winter level, there were treasure chests?
I think the chests are the sort of standard thing, and then the whole one we played had slightly different, but I think chests...
Like a ghost theme, but yeah. The idea is you have to get to a point, a key place on the board, and when you get there, you are asked if you've got enough keys, you can pay to open it, which then gives you the next tier of item, like a crown or... a trophy or whatever. You have like the two tiers of items. Keys and top tier. Crowns, shotguns, dildos, whatever. The one who has the most of the top tier item wins. Then it falls back onto who has the most keys.
I also throw out there that if you, you can change it, but if you, by default, if you get 5 of those items, you automatically win.
Ah, so if it max, once you get to 5 in total, it just, interesting, because Mario Party generally says that you can have as many as you want, it's just whoever gets the most by the end of the turns.
That's why there's only little 5 little icons. I think you can change that to have more or less, but yeah, it's the sudden death mechanic. It's also worth mentioning that in the first one we played, there was only one chest, and as you unlock it, it moves. Whereas in the whole one, there was like 3 or 4 of the sort of spirit cages around.
Yes. So. And there was also, there are kind of like NPC hazards on the boards. So on the horror one, we had like this big serial killer guy, like a butcher, and he would go after the winner or the highest scorer at that time and would hit them, and they'd lose health and keys because your characters have health. When you die, you have to go back to like the start point on the board. There was a psychotic bunny rabbit on the winter one, but I don't think that was there by default. No, that was an item, wasn't it?
So basically you also pick up items as you go around the board. So put on square land and you either get a reaper who'll take keys or health off whoever next lands on there. You can pick up items, you can get a health bonus, but they're generally the main 3 sort of ones you get. Or you pick up just keys as you land on spaces. And the items you can use on your like initiative order of the turn, you can use an item. Some have a range, some like a shotgun have like you'd be fairly close. Some like there's a swinging ball, you can basically target anywhere on the map. There's like a rocket you can jump on, you can fly, you'll fly 10 spaces to the nearest chest. There's a teleporter that switches you to another place. There's a variety of items that you can use. But there's also like these sort of super weapon items, of which there's only one on the board. It's highlighted at the start of the match. There's like a little proper icon next to it. And the first one we played, Zaber landed on it. He got this killer bunny. That was hilarious.
Oh, mate, don't.
Yeah.
That bunny was a dick.
That was so... This bunny... Picture the scene. You need to, if you ever watch it, you need to go watch the actual video because it's hilarious. Because his bunny, this bunny just pops around the board, but if it gets close to you, it'll hop to you and take you out. But it seemed to follow the board round. It kept following the board right until right at the end, where Skaz sort of like walked somewhere near it and it just went, "Fuck you, I'm not going to have you." And it just went and took him out immediately.
And I was like, what the fuck? I was nowhere near it. There was a wall.
Yeah, it flew through the wall.
A wall. A stone maze between me and the fucking bunny, which was cute as fuck, by the way. But when it literally clipped through solid objects to kick my ass, I was like, huh?
Yeah. That was the best part of the whole thing. So I was like, no, I didn't expect it to do that because it was following the board. It literally just went, "Fuck the rules, I'm doing my own thing."
I'm an NPC. Get fucked.
Yeah. So
rules be damned. But no, it's pretty fun, and it, as I say, it's a more adult spin on games like Mario Party and Sonic Shuffle.
Yeah.
Mouse and keyboard support's pretty solid. Huge variety of mini games. I mean,
I think there's about 60 different games in there.
Yeah, I don't think we hit the same one too often.
No, and also I had played a match previous, and there are quite a few mini games in that one which we never touched.
Yep,
there's quite a few in there. Some we did come across. So, oh, I know this one.
Yeah. As you do in like in Mario Party and that as well, like you'll occasionally come across. I mean, I'll be honest, Mario Party is a lot more repetitive. Like you will more often than not get the same game you've done before. Mm. And when you tie in waggle controls, that ain't fun.
Yeah,
at least that's in my opinion. I do not like motion controls in games unless I'm playing VR or something that actually requires motion controls. If I'm doing something that can be done on a button press, I would much rather do it on a button press than like wiggle my control pad about. It's like, that's just stupid.
Yeah, they never feel quite right. They always feel a little bit silly.
Yes.
So they never feel quite right.
Pummel Party was, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
As I say, I weren't looking forward to it to start with just because I don't really like Mario Party style games. But after we played it for like what, 2 hours?
Yeah, we played 2 matches. They are, there are 3 of us in the game, and each match took us about 1.25 hours. So they're fairly long matches, actually, by default. We're just 3 players. I mean, you can have up to 8 players.
But let's be fair, though. What board games don't take a fair while?
Well, no, that's true. They were longer than I was expecting them to be. They put it that way. I thought they were going to be like sort of like half hour, 45 minute long type things. And they're like, oh, now of course, that's decent. I'm not complaining. I enjoyed it. I'm not complaining about that. I was surprised by how long they were.
I think our first one was probably also more that we were bumbling around a lot. We didn't really know what we were doing, so we were kind of clicking around, trying to figure out what we had to do, where we had to go, what items did.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
The mini games get quicker as well. Once you've done them once and you know what you're doing, you don't have to sit there and look at the rules and sort of like remember what to do and so forth.
Was also part of the problem, weren't it? We were like reading the rules and waiting to ready up. And even when we got into the game, so what do we actually have to do? They're neat. I mean, how long are the mini games? Usually like 1 minute, 2 minutes?
Yeah, like that, a couple of minutes. There are some longer ones, but yeah, they're like a couple of minutes.
But they're generally pretty fun. I don't think we really found a bad one.
No, they're all right. They're all right.
To be honest. I really liked the shooter one. A first-person shooter one-shot kills thing. You only had one shot.
And the Quake player came out.
That was fun. Yeah.
The airplane one. That was hilarious. We had to fly the airplanes around for the
thing. I was terrible at that.
I know, because I was flying around the map. And I was like following the arrows to tell us where to go, and I was following around. I come back towards the finishing line. I was like, "There's a plane coming out of the fog in front of me."
Yeah, so I just started. I just started following Zaber in the end.
Yeah, it's like that's Zaber, that's Skaz, and then you just both flew past me.
Do you want to know what the funny thing is, though? If you look at the playback, we went the wrong way and still got lapped. We still got the lap bonus, we could have probably screwed with that.
I suspect a lot of the mini games are. I wouldn't say the mini games are totally horrendous. They're perfectly balanced, and I don't suspect they are that robust in terms of how it is. But the point is, because they're so short, it doesn't matter.
No, for sure.
So yeah, but you are right. You did get the. I'm intrigued to. I almost want to sort of just play them actually to try flying like in loop the loops over the finish line, see how much it registers.
Yeah, sure.
So
I think it's probably what it would probably do, and this is just me pulling things out of my ass right now. You would probably have to hit one of those like little checkpoint things before you could then go back and cross the line.
Probably. Or a certain number of checkpoint things.
Yeah.
Would be
so it would then reset the they're all pretty fun. I the ones I found hardest were the ones that involved colours.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Colours and shapes, because some of the shapes look the same. And colour-wise, I can't see colours to save my life. I didn't see a colour-blind mode in the game, but...
I don't think there is one, no. It's not a big team here. I think it's like 4 or 5 people who did this. It's not a big team.
But what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the...
I'd say it easily stands on Nintendo quality.
Yeah, I had issue with... I think we both had issues, actually, with the pot one, where you had to make the... soup up by picking the right ingredients.
Yes.
Because the pictures they showed you of the ingredients didn't match what was on the tables.
They didn't always seem to, no.
No.
I was like, I've got it. Yeah. Put it in. Next time around, I'm like, oh, hang on. Where is it?
Yeah, and there are things that look very similar to each other, and it's like, this is a little bit... If those icons match what was on the tables, like, you know, on tables, it's like a bird's eye view, and then they show you like a front on view. And I find that quite hard. Like, why don't you make a bird's eye view so they match? So at least if you are a bit colorblind, at least you can go by the shape as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Give you a bit of a fighting chance.
I agree on that one. That was a bit tricky at times. And I felt a bit cheated.
Yeah, because I'm sure I was right, but I was wrong. So I was like, I'm sure I was right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're fun. I mean, they are what they are. It's definitely I think it'd be great actually as a couch co-op game, because it's got the console versions are couch co-op for like split screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be hilarious for that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
That worked really good.
I was actually tempted to look it up for, like, if it's on Nintendo Switch or whatever, because then I'd probably play it with the Spuds.
Yeah, I think there's
a Switch
version.
Because I do not like Mario Party just because it's got waggle controls, it's got motion controls in it. I just don't want motion controls in games that don't require them. So why keep putting them fucking in it? Because Pummel Party is a perfect example of a board game, a party game, done right in the way that they were doing it back in the early 2000s, before waggle controls became a thing. But, yeah, so an all right game for the price. And as you say, it's got online play and...
Yep.
It's neat.
Yep. So, but yeah, if you check out our YouTube channel, you'll see, well, by the time this goes up, there'll be two videos out for Pummel Party, and we'll be playing our next session of it, this Tuesday on the 20th of September, which you will have missed by now by the time this comes out, but, you know, you can go on Twitch and look at it and watch the stream, and then the edited ones will come out shortly.
Marvellous.
Marvellous.
So you've been playing anything else, Ram?
Well, I have.
You have? It sounds like you're not sure.
No, I am sure. It did happen. This popped up on my... I load up Steam. This popped up. I looked at it and thought, oh, that looks similar to gameplay previously. I thought, I might give that a look. It's an early access. It's called Honey, I Joined a Cult.
I've seen you playing this. Like, on Steam, it's come up. I'm like, oh, God, what's he done?
So... Do you remember a few years ago I talked about Prison Architect?
Yes.
This is a very similar game to Prison Architect, to the point where it's like clearly heavily inspired by Prison Architect.
So
Prison
Architect, made by the same people?
No. This is okay. Prison Architect was made by people who made Uplink. Intervision. Is it Intervision who made Uplink?
I don't remember.
I know it's like they're like one of the original indie devs. There's like three of them. They're one of the original sort of indie little teams. They're still going strong. They made Uplink, Darwinia. Prison Architect was like probably their big one, the one that sort of they breaked out with in recent years anyway. Prison Architect, you were running a prison. You had to draw like outlines of the buildings. The buildings then get built. You had to put stuff in them and make them right for the prisoners, and then you could accept prisoners, and the prisoners have like a day-to-day life. They had their needs. Like they go to the canteen, they need toilets and all that sort of stuff, and you have to keep them happy while things events happened. So Honey Drawn a Cult is a similar principle, but the idea is the game starts where you are a cult leader, and he's at his cult, and he's being raided by, it's called the SOB, I can't remember what it stands for, but basically it's the equivalent of the FBI, and they raid his cult and basically take all his cult members out and sort of like shut him down. And he's like, well, time to move. So he just walks off with this massive briefcase full of money. He's acquired his time at the cult. And he bought a bus and decides to start all over again. And off he travels to a new cult. And then that's where you kick and you basically get to start the new cult. So it's very, the first part is make your cult up. So you have to pick an icon. So I looked for the icons. I was hoping to find a sheep or goat. Alas, there wasn't a sheep or goat, but there was a pig. So I have created the Cult of the Blessed Swine.
And, oh, dear.
Yes, the Cult of the Blessed Swine, because you can name the cult. Then you have to give your leaders what his title is. So my leader is called the Head Boar. You then have to put in what... deity do they worship. So we worship the Great Hog, and you also have to put in what your sacred relic is. So our sacred relic is the Golden Trotter. And then interesting, you have to put in what the singular noun is and the collective noun is for your cult members. So singular noun for my cult member is pig, and collective noun is swine. And I chose that. There's unfortunately no pig hat to match the icon, so I just picked a fairly plain. Because you're going to pick a hat, a uniform. You pick one for your leader, one for your cult members. So the leader looks slightly different to the cult members, or you can look the same if you want. So my cult members have got this all like sort of hat. Looks a bit like sort of, you know, those sort of Egyptian hats that were like a gold band. They had like a sort of snake in the middle.
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine that without the snake. It's just a plain upright bit of metal.
Okay.
I've got sort of fairly sort of like lightish clothes. I've got little tails as well, which I've made. I've done sort of like a pinkish colour, you know, pigs, pinkish colour. So there we are. So I start a cult, and you start off with four cult members, and you have to basically create. Basically, you have an area, and this is a 2D top down or virtually top down game, tile based game. And you have to build. The first thing you want to do is, so first of all, you need to build them some bedrooms. So you build them some bedrooms, which you'll like put in a, obviously some beds for them to sleep in. You need to give them like space to eat. So you might put a little basic canteen with a vending machine. So you basically build a building foundation. Then you have to. This is exactly how it works for Prison Architect. You basically have to designate what the room is going to be used for. So you say this area here is a bedroom. This area here is a canteen, and you'll then have a requirement to make that a valid area. So a bedroom, by minimum requirements, has to have a bed, or in this case, a dirty mattress is the basic level requires, and has some form of storage, which in the base game is the base version is a cardboard box. As long as you put those requirements in, boom, you're happy, you've met the requirements, the room is now usable, and your little cult members will use the room. So you build the little rooms up. So you obviously need the basics. You need a bedroom, you need a bathroom, you need a place for them to eat. And you also need to build the religious building, which is called the Sacred Trough in My Blessed Cult's kind of thing. And that's where your leader will do a sermon. Because every evening, by default at 11 p.m, every evening you'll do a sermon where you praise and bless to the people there to sort of like raise influence and so forth, and as you go around. So you have basically two groups of people who come to you. You have cult members and you have followers. So cult members are like your staff. They have to live on site, they need to have food on site. They basically are there 24/7. Followers are people that you encourage in, who come and they basically use the facilities, because you basically set up like these sort of therapy centres. So you might have this, by the first was like meditation. You have like a meditation area, and people come and they'll meditate, or they can go to the sacred trough and pray a little bit. And you, as time goes on, you unlock more therapy rooms, as they call it. And they've started from like sort of meditation. There's like a room where like you summon spirits and they sort of fly about. There's rooms where people get electroshock therapy. There's a room where people like bathe in maggots. Sort of like maggot cleansing room or something like that. You basically build these rooms up. People come and your followers come from the outside. They'll come in, go around, and at the end of the day, they go home. You can recruit followers into cult members. So cult members basically will run these rooms. So followers won't run them. They are just like, they're like customers, basically. You have to use your cult members to run the room. So you have a fundamental time in cult members you've got, which you can unlock through research. But until you do that, you are basically, you have really a limit to how many people you can have running these rooms and so forth. And obviously, you've got someone running the research department. You have a lobby where you greet people as they come in. And you have to people running these places. Now, you can't, you can basically, you don't so much assign people to these rooms. You can basically tell them to have like a high priority to say, right, your high priority is to go man the lobby. If there's no one there, you go to it. That's your high priority. If there's someone there already, then you can go off elsewhere. You can tell them not to touch a room. So you can say, don't do anything else, just this room. And you can like lock, as you unlock more rooms, you obviously switch more and more off. Or you can leave it blank and if they see a gap available, they'll go to it. Mm-hmm. And so they're pretty self-sufficient. You can pretty much leave it alone as long as you like sort of say, right, I want this person, I'm dedicating you to just doing this job, high priority, so I know someone's doing it. If you don't do that, they'll figure it out themselves anyway. They'll go off, and as long as there's enough of them, they'll man everything. You can also set up like working schedules and sleeping schedules, and also like recreational schedules, so you can like work in really hard if you want to have them working all day long, but that affects their happiness and moods. Or you can have them sleep longer or split the schedules up. I now have like a maintenance team that works overnight. So I have a couple of cult members who work in the maintenance department, because things break as day goes on. These guys have to go and find it. That is a bit of an annoyance. Oh, I will point, I have mentioned already, this game is in early access. So I'm going to say some issues with it, but I'm not going to give it too much of a king because it's early access. They can fix these.
Sure.
So the maintenance room, they basically will go off along patrols. Trouble is, they're a bit stupid. They'll like just go from room to room, but they can't work their way around your whole base. They'll just miss things constantly. They won't remember where they've been. It just like starts with, we go to the nearest room, check that, and work our way out. That's default behavior, no matter what. So they won't like remember where they've been. So realistically, you're going to be clicking on them and right clicking, go repair this. Because they will miss it. That, I think, something that does need improving, because that is quite annoying. I personally think that in this situation, that a tight-knit cult, if something broke down, they'd tell the maintenance people. So I personally think it should be a case of, if you're maintenance, something breaks down, you should head to it and repair it. It shouldn't be a case
Do they tend to cover like a certain distance before pathing breaks, or
it's not so much that, it's the fact that you can decide to have a wand. It's also has to go in a procedural way to work out to make him move. So it also goes, right, your room's here. Next nearest room you can find, go check that. Next room, go check that. And basically get him to check work there. So they work almost outwards. Trouble is, let's say go to the main room first thing, and they get, say, do it for 6 hours, gets halfway across your base. Then they have to go back to recreation, and then they come back to the maintenance.
They go back to room number one.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, could you not then say, set up a second maintenance room on the other side of the building so that they meet in the middle?
Well, I'm going to try that. That's one thing I thought about trying today, actually, to see if that would work. Because I don't need two maintenance rooms, really, but that might be enough.
But it's to save you micromanaging.
Yeah, that may be what I have to do. But I have a feeling, because of the way I'm looking at it, it's like, you can't say assign him to, okay, this is your maintenance room.
They'll go to like, okay.
Yeah, but what I have noticed is that a room can generally only have one person working in it. So what I imagine would happen is, if you sign two people to maintenance, one would go to the first maintenance room.
One will go, and then once that one's already been allocated, it will go to the...
It's still not, I still think it should be a case of, realistically, if you're a cult, they're going to tell everybody. So I personally think it should be a case that they should just go do all the pairs and...
Could it not just be as simple as assigning each room a number and then storing the last room it went to in a variable and then...
It's definitely doable. It's definitely doable. But again, it's early access, you know, and
from what
I've read, this is being published by Team 17, but there's two people working on this. So, I mean, it's neatly done, actually, for what it is. It's very neatly done. Very well done, actually. You also have missions. So, you basically can send people off to do things like, and the first basic one is PR. So, they'll go to someone, they'll basically start, like, you'll send, like, when your comm members to appear on a TV show, and that'll generate PR values for you. So, your resources, you have money, like you'd expect, which obviously you see spending on upgrading rooms. You have faith, which is basically all your followers acquire a certain amount of faith per day to keep them sort of happy and sort of following you. And so do all your cult members need some amount of faith per day. So that's like, you have to generate enough faith to keep everybody happy. So far, that's not been a problem to me. I maxed out that stat of about 4 days, and I've never gone below the maxed out figure. So I'm generating way more than I need. You've got influence, which is your sort of research currency, and influence is what you got. You basically, as people attend your place, they generate influence because they're being influenced by you. And you use influence whenever you have a sermon. You have to have a certain amount of influence to conduct the sermon. If you don't, the sermon fails, and they all get a bit distressed. But you also use influence to do research. So it's your research currency. Influence takes a long time to build up. So you will be grinding out. You will find yourself just waiting for days at a time to let it build up enough that you can do your next research. I don't think quite that bit balanced right. And there's no real way. There's no research to improve influence gains from what I've found, at least what I've looked for the tech tree. So you're sort of stuck. That's all the sort of like limit you've got. It's all your current stuff holding backness, as it were. You've also got PR. PR, as that goes up, that influences how good a cult follower you're going to get. So followers, when they become cult members, they have skills, like ranging from like sort of improvisation, and some of the skills are multi useful. So like they will have a skill like called improvisation. That's both useful on a PR type front, because they can, like, if they're like doing a question and answer, essentially they can improvise an answer. But also good for maintenance, because they might have to come up with a solution to a problem that's not, they can't fix easily, so they have to sort of like figure something out. That's quite that's quite a nice link. So a lot of these skills double up in certain areas, and obviously different rooms as well require different set of skills. What you end up doing is basically maxing out everybody on a certain skill. Like, okay, you're going to have all your points put into inference, into intelligence, and what have you, just so I can max out. But you have, they can, there's a maximum level your cultists can reach, and that level is dependent on how good on their quality. So a very bad quality cultist might be able to get to level 3, and their skill's going to get to like level 5. So because you get 2 points per level, their skill's going to get to like level 5 max. Whereas but higher level one, their skills might be like maximum level 7, but they can get to like quite high up in skills. So you can get several skills very high up. Sure. And to increase the quality of your followers, and then by definition your cultists, you need PR. And as your PR figure goes up, you'll basically unlock higher grades of them. And the idea is you're meant to sort of like kick out the lower ones as a time cost. I've never had, because I'm not cruel enough to do that. But you're meant to kick out the lower level ones as time goes on, so you get better overall members. It hasn't proved a problem so far. The final stat you have is heat. And heat is generated by doing PR campaigns. If a cult member or follower leaves, they're fed up, they generate... Basically, heat's basically bad publicity.
You don't want the coppers to turn up when it gets too much.
Exactly. Well, but first of all, when you get too high heat, first of all, you'll get protests outside. And then eventually, the police turn up and start arresting your cultists. You can unlock heat reduction missions, which basically go out and they basically reduce the heat level. Again, the missions aren't quite that well balanced. I can do like 2 missions and then do a heat reduction mission. And I've got a fairly big cult now, but I'm about half through the tech tree, fairly big in size. I've got quite a lot of money in the bank because I'm just waiting to unlock the last 2 bits. And my heat level is like 2 and out of 2,000. Because as long as you just like 2 missions and a heat reduction mission, you're just going to knock it all out. Because the bonus is too good. So there's some tweaks to be done here. I think my show at the moment is that it's definitely got the nub of a game, because game to be there, but it's not quite there. There's a few bits missing off. I think the thing is I've got issues with it is that in Prison Architect was actually more detailed than this, to the point where obviously your prisoners were trying to escape, which you obviously don't really have the issue of cult members trying to escape. But things like you'd have fires, which you'd have to deal with, and that's a management problem. When you have a fire, you have to deal with it and try and sort of shut stuff down, move people around, get the fire brigade in, control the fire brigade going through. You also had riots to deal with. There was a lot of like events that can happen to deal with. This doesn't really have that, apart from like the police turning up or the people protesting, but you can control that fairly easily. So you haven't got those sort of events. So I've been basically able to set the game running at full speed and just run it at full speed constantly with no real problem, because nothing, I've never really have any bad problems. Is the bad things that happen aren't bad enough to cause you issues. I've never had to go, right, I need to pause this and think about this. How am I going to manage this? It's just not quite got that at the moment, obviously. Early access hasn't quite got that little bit of balance yet, right? You're sort of like generating stuff, you're getting the money and so forth, but I'm at a stage now, it's like, well, I can't spend any money on anything, because I've got nothing, I haven't unlocked anything else. Research, the jump up cost of research jumps up so fast, so basically research would cost you 50 inference. I'm now at the stage where it cost me 460, but I'm generating only probably about 150 a day, and I'm quite basically as big as I can be. So I'm just basically, so I can obviously be something else, but I'm going to be sitting there now for like 2 or 3 days, just having to wait for the day to run through, just to get enough influence so I can research the next thing. I've got loads of money in the bank. Maybe there should be somewhere that I can spend the money and buy influence. Because hey, if you're a cult leader, apparently that's something you should be able to do. you know, bribe some official, spend some money and get, and basically have a bit of an economy going on. So it's got the nub of a game that's, I mean, I don't forget, I've put 10 hours, I've actually enjoyed what I've been doing it, but it's very much a game of, I have this game running, but I've got something else on the other go as well. So I've been having some YouTube videos on the go as well while I've been playing the game as well. Sort of watch, and sort of like, I'm with something like a sort of distraction type game where I sort of not, I don't have to pay too much attention to it.
Yeah, like a clicker or Hero or
something like that. Very much like that. So, and it's still not, I mean, obviously there's that little bit of, I want to get my base bigger, but I'm sort of saying, well, there's no point in getting my base any bigger because I can't, because you also get limited followers as well. You have to do research to unlock more followers, and that limit basically stops you in your tracks. I think Prison Architect worked by, you can have as many prisoners as you had beds. That was your fundamental limit. Put more beds and you'll get more prisoners. I think perhaps that'd be a better system where you could have a, you could basically build more beds, make the beds more expensive, but when you build them, you can get more, that's how you get more cult members, because cult members are what basically man the rooms, donate the money, and that then is all linked into your followers as well. So I think there's definitely room for improvement. It's not quite there yet. It's not quite as Prison Architect I just sort of lost myself in. I wasn't interested in it. I was just like, I'm just doing day-to-day management. This hasn't quite got to that stage yet. So, but as it's only early access, it's fairly cheap. I think it's about about 20 quid at the moment, which is actually, I think 15 quid at the moment, which actually ain't bad. I'm quite happy with that. I think for it's pretty solid. There's a couple little bugs in it, but it feels like a solid game. It's obviously the core mechanics there. You just need to add stuff to it now to flesh out a little bit. It doesn't feel anyway sort of clunky or hunky at all at the moment. There's a few little bugs in it, but nothing major. So I'm enjoying at the moment, but it just needs a little more time. But as it says, early access, so I'll keep an eye on it, and when it comes out of early access, I might revisit it.
It's all good.
Cool.
Anything else?
No, that is me done today. I've got my blessed swine are waiting for me. See how I've got to go worship the great hog, and away we go.
So I now imagine you're going to be sat there for the rest of the night.
There's a distinct possibility, to be honest. The game is currently minimum. The game is currently it's shut down at the moment, but my Steam is sat open waiting for me to click play again.
Oh dear. So I know what'll happen if I don't see you tomorrow. Chances are, if I check Steam, you'll still be sat at your desk.
Yeah, possibly. But no, it's a neat. Yeah, it's neat.
Cool.
Neat. Right then, well, in that case, time to wrap up, I suppose. So thank you both for watching or listening from the podcast. I've been the Suffolk Ram.
Scasius.
You can join us again on our next podcast, which is going to be on the 9th of October, 2021, GMT plus one. We won't be able to say that for much longer. As we sort of start our countdown to Christmas, Scaz.
Ugh.
If it's only like, sort of like four or five episodes to go, we'll be on a Christmas special. Makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? You can check us out on our game nights every other Tuesday. Next one is on the 28th of September, and then the one after that will be the 5th of October. So you can check us out on that game night. You can view my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/thesuffolkram.
And you can see mine at twitch.tv/Scazius, SK4ZZI0US.
Check out our website, randoms.co.uk. You can also email us comments at randoms.co.uk as well. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, and I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks' time.
Marvellous.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.